For all of these years, we have seen that the early church has gathered together, and there's been preaching, and there's been prayer, and there's been singing, and there's been giving. And so if you're in here wondering, why do we do this every Sunday? Well, we just want to be biblical, first of all. We want to be obedient, second of all. All right, so if the early church did it, we want to be a part of that. We don't want to reinvent anything. So I want to thank you for keeping it pure, keeping it, I guess, non-showy. Is that a word? Non-showy? Okay. Today, we officially make it a word. Non-showy. Okay. I guess you can put non in front of any word and make it a word, right? But I appreciate being able to come and just keeping it as genuine as we can. I can't do anything for your heart. I can only deal with my heart. But I'm grateful to you. I'm grateful that we have, that we are centering everything around this word. It's truth. It's truth. And it speaks to all areas of our life. We talked about discipleship making in there, and I think I mentioned it. I don't know if I mentioned it or not, but you know, there's always an area. If you're engaging in someone's life, there's always something to pass on to somebody else about the Word. Even past the fundamentals of who Jesus is and what the church is about and where we got all started from. You know, then we go to daily living. You know, that's what I love about God. He's all about our daily life. He's all about the small details. He's all about your struggles, your concerns, your pain. I want to remind you of that today because he's that real to us. He's worried about, he's concerned or deals with and addresses the issue of even our marriages. I mean, what is that all about? I mean, this is a beautiful thing that we've been studying. We're just going to finish it up this week. I know so much more could be said. So much more could be said. But you just want to kind of touch the surface here. And if the Lord brings it back to us, we'll entertain it again. But right now, this is where we're at. And I want you to take your Bibles and turn to Ephesians 5. And this is one of the areas that God is interested in, and He wants us to make certain that we're squared away on. It's the issue of marriage. You say, why would he be concerned about that? We know that the family is the bedrock of society. When the family crumbles, so goes society. You know, you have to have strong marriages to have strong families. You say, well, you know, we've got families today with children who have two moms and two dads. They seem pretty concrete, pretty foundational, but it's not biblical. It's not even constituted a family. And I'm not being insensitive. I'm just being real. This is what God says. And this is where anytime we bring up stuff like this, it's countercultural. And so there are times, anytime you speak the word, it's going to be countercultural. And so this is one of the issues that Paul jumps off into. And he shows us our relationships that we're to have with one another as husband and wife. So he says, and he speaks to husbands as we have been doing, and we'll close it out this day. Verse 25 of Ephesians 5, he says, husbands, you there? Okay. Husbands, love your wives. That's not a small task. It's not a small task. How should I do that, Tommy? How should I love my wife? Well, glad you asked, because he says right in the next phrase, as Christ loved the church. and gave himself up for her. I want you to keep this in comparison. That he might sanctify her, as he's talking about the church here. He might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word. This is what God is doing in the church. Sanctifying her, cleansing her by the word. So that he might, here's the ultimate destiny, he might present the church to himself in splendor, majesty, magnificence, glory, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. That's going to be a great and grand day. So he's working, he's moving in your life, he's concerned about every area of your life, and as he's doing this, he's doing it so you'd be holy and pure. That's why I think it was, Martin Lloyd-Jones, who said it's not the size of the church that God is concerned about in the New Testament epistles are concerned about. It's the purity of the church. Give me 20 people who are pure in the sight of God and have a desire to worship and meet with God, and their lives are practically pure, than a thousand whose lives are just lived in debauchery, in adultery, in secret sin. He wants the purity of the church. And ultimately, we won't be pure right here perfectly, but he's working and he's presenting us to present us as this, for this glorious destiny one day. That when our faith will be sight. But you're looking for that time when there are no more faith issues. It's all a sight. I see God. I see whom I've been singing about and singing to all these years in as an issue of faith. The one that I've been trying to trust my whole entire life. I don't have to wonder anymore. He's there before me in all his splendor and all his glory. So God is sanctifying, cleansing his church, right? And so he says, in the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. Because we are members of his body. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. The mystery is profound, and I am saying that it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. We saw the precept of love last week, where Christ has called us to this continual love as Jesus loved. This strange thing of having Christ being the head, yet at the same time we see in him love. Because we often think of headship and authority as being powerful and tyrannical or not really being love. But we don't see that with Jesus. Jesus, as the head, carries a cross and he also carries a cloth. So he's come to sacrifice and he's come to serve. And if you can always picture that as the husband, sacrificing and serving his wife. And so Paul says you've got to love, and it's this the highest kind of love. It's not a physical love only. I mean, that's part of marriage. God has gifted us with that. But it's not the physical touch necessarily. It's not even just this emotional bonding. That goes along with marriage. But he's saying, husbands, love your wives to the fullest extent, the deepest, most sacrificial type of love that you can ever love her with. There's nothing deeper. There's nothing greater. He says it's a continual thing. Use present tense. Love, continually love your wife. Doesn't change. Be loving towards your wife. Treat her as lovely. Do the things that are truly lovely things. And then we saw the pattern of love. How do we love? In jealousy, in tyranny, in cruelty. The pattern of love is found in verses 25 and B in 28 and 29 when he says, as he gave himself up for her, and then he says, love as you love your own bodies, you love your, the husband is to love his wife as he loves himself. So there is this self-giving, there is this loving for the benefit of others, there is loving as his he loves his own bodies, body. And so we see this pattern set forth. There is always this sacrificial element in this husband-to-wife love. There's always this sacrificial element. As Christ came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. And so what am I saying to you? Listen, when we think about how Christ came and how he loved the bride, he served the bride. He sacrificed for the bride. Acts tells us that he purchased the church of God with his own blood. That's sacrifice. And so he gave willingly. He gave voluntarily. He gave everything he had. He held nothing back. Let's just kind of bring that right back home to us today, husbands. Can it be said that I'm holding back? Because everything that I do as a husband ought to bring show the magnificence of the wife. But let's face it, what the way we treat our wives sometimes doesn't reveal her magnificence. It shows, and though we would never say it with our lips, that she is inferior or she doesn't have the value, we would never ever say that, but we treat her like that. We're derogatory towards her. You see, what we see is that when Christ was giving himself sacrificially to the church, he gave it all for her benefit, the benefit of the bride, the church. And so the husband must give himself personally and sacrificially. He must give himself for his bride. Who's he giving himself for? Who's the husband giving himself for? His bride. For her. He's looking out for the good of his wife. And we mentioned that Dr. Kent Hughes elaborated on what sacrificial love consists of, and this is what we dealt with. We dealt with that sacrifice consists of death. The man, if you're gonna plan on marrying somebody, you better be willing to die. And some would say, it feels like death in my relationship. That's not the kind of death we're talking about. It probably feels like that kind of death because a husband has not been willing to die. What I mean by the death of a relationship, it feels like there's no joy there. It's just kind of, I see you in the morning, I see you at night. There's no intimacy there. There's no relationship there. It feels like the relationship is dead. And usually it's because the husband hasn't died to himself a lot of the time. You remember, you bear the sole responsibility of how your family life goes. And way too much weight has been, too much responsibility has been placed on the wife when it should not be. Marriage is a call to die. And a man who does not die for his wife does not come close to the love to which he is called. Christian marriage vows are the inception of a lifelong practice of death, of giving over not only all you have, but all you are. To say that you would physically give your life to save hers, that's easy to do. But when you say that, it's ironic that we would say, I would give my life physically for this lady, but you don't cherish her enough to sacrifice in any other ways. It's confusing. It's hypocritical. And so it's a death to our rights. It's a death to our time. It's a death to our perceived pleasure. It's a death to selfish endeavor. And it takes a strong man to die. It takes a godly man to die. And then there's suffering. Christ not only died in the sacrifice, he suffered. He suffered not only, Christ suffered when his bride suffered. And that's what we brought out last week, that when God said, Saul, why are you persecuting me? He was persecuting the church. Well, when you persecute the church, you persecute Christ. And so it should be with husbands to their wives. You are going to be the very one in her life that's going to share her injustices, that's going to share her pain and her cruelties. And by the way, she goes through disappointments. You're going to be the one. You're the one in her life to share those disappointments. You're getting into her world and you're sharing her insecurities. You're sharing her despairs that she's going through life. Our wives feel these things. Get into her world, gentlemen. And I know that sin has corrupted a marriage and it blinds us. Sin blinds us to the needs that our wives have every day of our life. So sacrifice is involved, and it's involved. It means enduring suffering that your wife endures. And that's what sacrificial love does. It involves death and suffering. And guess what? I like this. He said it involves intercession. You know what Jesus did for his church, for his bride? You know, people say that our Father which art in heaven is the Lord's Prayer, but really, technically speaking, I like the thought of that John 17 is the Lord's Prayer. That's when he makes intercession for the church. Let me just read you some of the things that John 17 says. Just listen to how he prays for the church. He's preparing. This is his high priestly prayer in John 17. I just want you to listen. Just hear this. He says in verse 9, I am praying for them, as he speaks to God and he prays to the Father. I am not praying for the world, but for those who you have given me, for they are yours. All mine are yours, and yours are mine, and I am glorified in them. And I am no longer in the world, but they are in the world, and I am coming to you. Holy Father, keep them in your name. He's asking God the Father to keep the church, which you have given me, which they that they may be one, even as I are, as we are one. While I was with them, I kept them in your name, which you have given me. I have guarded them, and not one of them has been lost except the son of destruction, that the scripture might be fulfilled. But now I am coming to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they might have my joy fulfilled in themselves. You see what he's asking God the Father to do? I have given them your word. The world's hated them because they're not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. And then he tells them, Father, would you sanctify them in the truth? Your word is truth. You see how he's praying for them? That they all may be one, that we may be one group of people. And Bart said it well when he spoke. He said, you know, what other reason would we have for this eclectic group to come together? What other reason would we ever come together? It's Christ. It's Christ. And there is a unity, and there's the same spirit, and there's the same direction, and there's the same love. And what I am saying to you, one of the things that we as husbands fail to do is pray for our bride. Do you pray for your bride on a regular basis? I'm not talking about these casual, ordinary prayers. God bless my wife. May she get a lot done at the house. May her day be prosperous. No. I'm talking about really pouring yourself out for her, pleading with God to bless her and to show favor upon her, pleading with God that he would mature her in the faith, pleading with God for her emotional and physical and spiritual needs and mental needs to be met, all of those things. Do you remember that movie, Fried Green Tomatoes? If you have not seen that, that's an awesome movie. Do you remember the husband? He would come every day, and she would be so excited to see her. The wife would be seeing her husband, and she would come. And now this is the modern day. You know, when they're looking back, they're telling the story of what happened in old, but now this is the modern day. And she comes in. She's waiting at the door for her husband. The husband comes in, been playing softball. And he takes a beer and he rips it open. He got fried chicken and he sits in front of the TV and he's eating his fried chicken and drinking his beer. He says, oh man, you put a good scald on this bird, you know. That's the relationship. And this woman throughout the movie goes out of her way to show, hey, I need some attention. I need you to be in my life. So she does it a little more radical. She gets a little radical. I don't suggest any of this. But that's what she did. She's going through a life change herself. And the life change is kind of, and there's no Christ in this. So if you're looking for Christ to be in this story, it's not in this story. But what she did was not what Christ adheres to and says, this is the right thing to do. But it's a picture of what so many women are looking for in their lives and in their marriages. And all the husband does is he comes home and he goes through the ordinary, he carries out his day, and it's all the same. He shows no concern for his wife. He doesn't engage her. He doesn't think about her emotional and physical and spiritual needs. It's just a matter of eating the fried chicken and drinking the drink and just going on and carrying out, because they've become lazy in trying to figure out, how can I make this the best marriage? And some of you have been married way longer than I've been alive. And sometimes when you get married that long, it gets stale. It gets stale and it gets boring and there's no life in there. And you just carry out these perfunctory things every day, these routine things that you do every day. I am telling you, one of the greatest blessings and ways that we can be a blessing to our wives is to intercede in deep agony for this lady. She does have to live with you. So there's at least one thing to pray about. You know what I love about when I think about this? That Christ interceded for the church. He doesn't abandon the church anywhere. Did you notice that? He goes up to heaven, but he leaves the Holy Spirit. And he never anywhere abandons the church. The church is not frailing. The church is not trying to come up with a plan. He is always there empowering the church. He never abandons. And he doesn't abandon the church in his intercessory prayer. My friends, we never abandon the love of our life. You engage her in her life. So he says, husband, love your wives even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her, for it. Someone has said the love Christ has for his bride in any bride is one of constant affection, sincere, pure, ardent, notwithstanding her imperfections she is guilty of. Did you hear that? Christ still is engaged in a continual, habitual, perpetual, ongoing love relationship with his bride, regardless of her imperfections. And he goes on to say, think how much patience does Christ have towards the church? How often he has endured the loss of affection and rebellion? Is there any problem a man could have with his wife that Christ hasn't had with his? And how did Christ handle those problems? The one thing that we see about Christ and his relationship with the church is that he never considers the church of secondary importance. He always places high value upon her. There's not a casual interest of Christ with the church. No casual interest here. He gave himself without reservation. And I think that what we see sometimes is that a husband will take the weaknesses and faults of his wife and justify his actions towards her. What actions? Failing to give her love like she needs to be loved. Failing to give her attention that he vowed to give her and care for her and to love her on the day he married her. Be careful with that. Because it's easy for us to say, you know, this woman, she squeezes from the top of the toothpaste and not the bottom. She leaves all the drawer, the cabinets open. I got you, man. I'm there. And she would turn around and say, why does this man, how hard is it to pick up his underwear and to put it in the basket? That's the joy of marriage, man. There's a couple of y'all in here like that? Yeah. We won't show of hands because then we start getting into the nitpicky stuff. I try to stay away from that. But there are faults. There are weaknesses in every one of us. And Christ died for all of that. He didn't use it against us, nor are we to use it against her. So we take note of this pattern of love. We are called to love our wives as the men are called to love their wives as their own bodies. For he that loves his wife loves himself. We're called to love our wives as our own bodies. You know, most well-adjusted people, I'm not talking to people about people who mutilate their bodies and does weird things to their body. Most well-adjusted people love themselves, don't they? I mean, it's not this prideful, selfish kind of love that is sinful. We're talking about a wholesome, normal love of yourself where you take care of your body. We don't take care of it perfectly, but you know we're going to feed it. You go without feeding your body. Go without caring for yourself. And so the Bible talks about that he nourishes and cherishes it. To cherish means to cherish, to rear up, to nurture. To cherish primarily means to keep warm. It's a metaphor of tender love. And that's what's going on here. He says, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it just as Christ does the church. Christ is always nourishing and always cherishing the bride, and so we are to do to our wives. It's the same word that Paul uses in concept in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 when he said, we not only came to you and gave ourselves of you, or gave the word, we gave ourselves to you. We cared for you as a nurse cherishes her, or a mother cherishes her child. Now, can I just get this thought in your mind? We are to love her as we love our own body. And doesn't that mean, and at least imply, that if I'm to love her as I do my own body, then I'm going to protect her. Not just physically, I'm going to protect her spiritually. From any possible harm, he guards his body. He guards his mind, should, and he guards his soul. And so he should be watching as a primary accountability and responsible person in the marriage. He is to watch and guard and protect her. That's a lot different than what we have going on today in marriages. Think about how a man naturally cares for his own body. He provides for his own comfort. He gets his sleep. He gets his clothing. He gets his food. He protects his body from harm. He listens to the signals of his body. He desires its well-being. I remember my wife years ago, we were just married, lived in that old house, and I remember she always been having some issues with her stomach, so we found out it may be her gallbladder. We don't know what it is, never been to the doctor, but she had an attack one night, and she's always had issues, and one night she stayed up the whole night, all night, pacing the floor back and forth. And she never felt comfortable enough to tell me. That's not on her. That's on me. Because I didn't provide an atmosphere for her that she felt like she could wake me up. And I failed her in that regard. And I am saying that when we're in pain, we see to it that we get take care of the pain, and we must do for our wives, protect her from harm, desire her well-being, love her by caring for her physically and emotionally. Why? And we'll close with these thoughts. He says, in the same way, husbands should love their wives, their own body. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his own body. The purpose of the love is to cleanse and to sanctify her, as shown earlier, verses 26 and 27. That's what Christ is doing to the church. He wants to make the church holy, to cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her the idea of the bridegroom setting forth the bride. Here she is in all her beauty, in all her splendor, in all her majesty. Husbands, have you done that to your wife? Here's my bride. She's beautiful. She's aged, but she's beautiful. She's just as beautiful now as she was the day I met her. Here she is in all her splendor and all her glory. It doesn't matter how long you've been married. Do you understand that your wife will never get tired of that? Never get tired of hearing that. Never get tired of knowing that she is worthwhile and that she is valuable. Here we are, gentlemen. We ought to be men of integrity and godliness to say, I want to nourish and cherish my wife. In other words, I want to provide for my wife's growth and development. I want to provide an atmosphere. If you're going to get married one day, you have this squared away. That when you get married, you say, listen, I'm all about her. Because I'm all about Christ. And I want to open up for her every opportunity that she may grow to love Christ. My relationship with her ought to make her love Christ even more. Marriage reveals things about our wives that no one else knows about. No one else knows about that lady beside you like you know. Her weaknesses, her inconsistencies, people never see them. So you're not to love them as a saint, someone said. You love them as a sinner. That's how Christ loves us, as a sinner, but we're saints at the same time. And so as we live a godly life, leading our wives as the head of the home, she graciously submits to this beautiful picture of Christ being the head. Is your wife more like Christ, gentlemen, because she's with you? Has she shrunk from his likeness because of you? Do you sanctify her, or do you hold her back? Is she a better woman because she's married to you? She should be. Well, so man, she's going to be ready to divorce me. Wait a minute now. Here's something you can do. Go to your wife and say, I am sorry for how I have neglected you. In any way, if I have neglected you and made you feel like you're not valuable, I want to tell you, I am sorry. I love you. And I'm not going to be perfect, but I'm going to cherish you for the woman you are. And by God's grace, I'm going to try to do it consistently. Yes, I'm going to fail. You remind her of that, okay? I'm going to fail. But you have my heart. I committed to you, and I want to open up a life for you that helps you grow in Christ. I don't want to come home and belittle you. I don't want to come home and you cringe because I'm coming home. I want it to be an atmosphere where you just can't wait to see me. I want it to be an atmosphere where you grow in Christ. That's what she wants. And that is so easy when a woman feels love like that, to follow the headship of the man. And so, having said that, you want her to enjoy you as being the provider and the defender, You make her burden lighter, not heavier. He's taken the responsibility to lead and to provide and to protect, and you willingly fall in line because you know this man loves me as Christ loved the church. You know what submission does? I think it was David Platt. It says, submission shows the wife trust the husband's love. Submission shows the wife trusts the husband's love. It's a beautiful picture of the gospel. May they see it today.